5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
The global recession we are heading to. The ongoing fight against the media. The leftist is ready to turn into violence. And which policy changes do we need to increase the profits in renewable energy? This and more on today's episode of Hof Profit. So check it out, hofprofit.com/podcast. And don't forget to share, like, retweet, and leave your comments and messages below. Hey, my lovely listeners, how are you doing? I'm happy to have you aboard, and I really like it to have you in one of my great followers. Let's begin at the global recession we are heading to. Before you begin, we are not heading towards a recession, and President Trump made it illegal for Chinese companies to invest in the United States. So what it means for me with an office with a company in Hong Kong, I'm not sure at the moment. I sincerely know that this is something that will be retaliated, and I'm pretty sure that this is the beginning of the end of the American dominance in the world economy. And the reason I say so is China and India are having 2/3 of the world population, just two countries, so that's one thing for you to consider. The second thing that you have to consider is what will happen after this. And you see ongoing things happening, and ultimately there is a big trend going, and we are now heading towards a trade war. We are in a trade war, sorry, and we are heading toward a physical war. And the physical war means extremely lucrative profit moments, but then you have to be smart, position yourself for it. And if you're not positioned in it, then you have a big problem. And first of all, I will release soon a free report. It's just a freebie, how to survive a war, just surviving it. Because that's one of the things that you really need to do, understand first, that we are there and you need to survive, because the bullets are gonna fly, and that's something that I sincerely am afraid of, especially as you're like me, partly sighted, and you're openly a Jew, then your life is pretty much in danger. So then maybe I should simply move to the ghetto called Israel. And yes, Israel is nothing more than a ghetto altogether, and the only place where we are safe and free. But what you need to think about with the recession that we are now heading towards, how can we survive? You see that retail company is having big problems, and still at the moment the online shopping is not that high percentage of overall shopping. Okay, most of the consumer spending, the true power of an economy, is in most countries it's in living in sort of a rental place, or paying off your home loan, or simply paying off your energy bill and those things. And it's time for you to check it out and to move it out and simply reduce those bills. And it is, look, it's easy. China's gonna retaliate. You see that India did break up a lot of free trade partnership because it had problems with transfer pricing. And transfer pricing basically means that companies decide where they gonna make the profits. That's their choice. That's not an... And it sounds really weird, but it is a matter of a fact that paying tax is for a company a choice. And why should you make that choice? Why should you pay tax if you're if there's no legal thing to do so? I know that it's really interesting. It's something that people say that's unfair, but it's within the law. And I always say that you should realize what the history of your country is. The Netherlands and the United States are formed on a tax dispute, on nothing more and nothing less. And if you look at the recession we are heading to, I will ask you some interesting questions. A lot of companies and households are over their eyeballs into debt. How are they gonna finance themselves when interest rates are going up? Companies are closing already, and we have now artificial low interest rates. Central banks are basically saying to bankers, well, your compliance divisions can take a break. So it's something for you to really check it out and think about it. All the listeners love to making some money, but you will have to pay tax upon your money. But that's to change. You can save on your tax. Pay no tax. Completely legal. Start earning more money so you can take care for your beloved ones. So you can travel visa-free. Get yourself the tax-free passport. Get yourself the starting point to a tax-free lifestyle. A lifestyle which is an ultimate freedom. Hofprofit.com/passport. I say hofprofit.com/passport. European Union imposed completely global covering privacy laws, so it's the highest time for you to be transparent, unless you want to pay a 20 million euro fine. And yes, the European Commission is on a witch hunt, so get ready. So check out GDRP compliance course on hofproffer.com/GDRP. That's hofproffer.com/GDRP.
The Brexit is here. Article 50 is triggered. The talks are going on. Unprecedented change will happen. We know this, we know things for certain. The Brexit is a profit maker, at least if you are open for making some money. Get yourself the profitable Brexit report. It explains how the Brexit could happen, the economic fundamentals. Finally, also a few great methods to make some money on the Brexit. So, are you a profit maker? Are you someone that's open-minded when it comes to making profits? Check hofproffer.com/Brexit. Social media is here. Facebook, Snapchat, Twitter, Weibo, blogging, LinkedIn, Swan, Google+. But how to use them in your advantage? Get yourself the social media export course. It's the smart point to use all social media in your advantage without burning all your time. hofproffer.com/smm. I say hofproffer.com/smm.
We are living in a tremendous time. Never it has become so easy to become the next millionaire. If it's become the next self-made millionaire by selling your home or your business or by constantly and ongoingly moving towards the great, glorious millionaireship. You can do it also. It just commits hard work, training, commitment and honesty. Visit hofproffer.com/millionaire for the millionaire report and join the queue on the highway to success. If you look at the world and then we see, especially in the United States and in India, we see a tend to increase violence. And this is something that really should be discussed once. First of all, the situation in India. India has a few bomb attacks a day. And you see that the people who are against Trump are now calling for, hey, if you see Trump supporters, yell them out, kick them out. If you see a restaurant with Trump supporters, then make sure that they are being wiped out of the restaurant. If you see politicians from the Trump administration start wooing, and you see that some radical left organizations are saying, well, it's time to use bomb attacks and violence against Trump. And you can agree with Trump, you can disagree with him. In this podcast, I gave platform to many people about him. But there's one thing that we need to realize. He is elected democratically. No one had an argument and had to say anything about the fact that he was elected. You can say that Russian media interacted with this. Well, let me ask you this thing. The United States is meddling with elections everywhere in the world. They are actively financing and supporting the Ukrainian army in a fight with a proxy war with Russia, which is happening at the moment. So what you need to think about is, why would people do this? I mean, the only reason that Vladimir Putin is interested in meddling in the United States is just because of the fact that the United States is really important, and sooner or later this is gonna go wrong. I mean, if you look back at the 1970s, there were a few thousand bomb attacks by terroristic people placed on the annual basis. And what you should ask yourself is this: is this the world you want to live in? Is this the world that we can support? Is this a world where you want to have your kids growing up in? I mean, what is the future that you see for yourself in such a world? Because this is what we are heading towards, and this will go wrong. And then it is time for you to be prepared. It is time to be ready for it. It's time for you to consider what your next steps are. And I will be clear, you have to prepare for this. And you see, there is a lot of conspiracy theory about the Rothschild Bank and the Rothschild family, but the fact is that they are extremely rich over time. So they are doing at least one thing right. And what I considered purely from an investment perspective brilliantly was when they were financing one of the many French-British wars on the continent of Europe, they had their own, they were financing both sides. And this is something really important for you. Be extremely neutral and have a place to go to. Have a second place, because there is no chance for you to do you want, because if you can know where, no way to hide, then well, then you're locked up when the rockets and the bullets are flying. Do you like that idea? Do you like the idea to be there where the bomb attacks are? And don't get me wrong, I mean, terrorism is just a tactic of military warfare. What you could do, what I expect to go happening pretty soon, is that dozens of thousands of small drones are going to attack airfields. You can make those drones, you can buy them for a few euros in your local toy store. And what they are going to do after it is slowly on, push on, move on. But then you can destroy a complete airfield with half a billion to a billion of fighter jets. And what I always consider interesting, when you're at an airport, they are checking it, they check your bag, and they're doing all those things. Well, really interesting. But in Amsterdam Schiphol Airport, there is a highway that goes under the why do you say it? Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm recording this at 5:23 in the morning, and I'm up already 2 hours, and I'm really feeling the heat and tired. So that's now where the airplane, the strip for the aircraft to go over. There's a highway under it. That highway is pretty often fully loaded in a traffic jam. Hey, I got a secret for you. It only takes a cheap bazooka or a gun to shoot at an aircraft, and the damage will be extreme. And before you say that, you should do this. No, don't do this. And I suggested this as a security risk to a friend of me who was then a member of parliament in the Netherlands. I said, "Hey, I would do something against this, because all you need, and don't forget terrorism and all those things. How will government and bureaucrats react when they are the victims? You see now that normal people are the victim of the terroristic attacks everywhere. And don't forget those terror attacks and those guerrilla attacks. It's a war strategy. It's a strategy. It's a method to achieve what you want. It's literally happened before. And if you play it smart, you can achieve what you want. It's just an historical fact. I don't approve it. I disapprove it. But I really think that you need to prepare for this. And what are my first of all, if it allows, you should get yourself some weapons and some ammo and all those things. Secondly, what you need to do is get yourself on a second citizenship, just that you have a place to hide. And thirdly, get a place to hide. And fourthly, get food and things that you can survive for a few months. Because never forget, your local store has only a few days food ready. So when there is something wrong, people are searching for it. And I don't want you to lose out on this and be a victim of the collapse of society.
All the listeners love to making some money, but you will have to pay tax upon your money. But that's to change. You can save on your tax. Pay no tax. Completely legal. Start earning more money so you can take care for your beloved ones. So you can travel visa-free. Get yourself the tax-free passport. Get yourself the starting point to a tax-free lifestyle. A lifestyle which is an ultimate freedom. Hofprofit.com/passport. I say Hofprofit.com/passport.
The European Union imposed completely global covering privacy laws, so it's the highest time for you to be transparent, unless you want to pay a 20 million euro fine. And yes, the European Commission is on a witch hunt, so get ready. So check out GDPR compliance course on hofprofit.com/GDPR. That's hofprofit.com/GDPR.
The Brexit is here. Article 50 is triggered. The talks are going on. Unprecedented change will happen. We know this, we know things for certain. The Brexit is a profit maker, at least if you are open for making some money. Get yourself the profitable Brexit report. It explains how the Brexit could happen, the economic fundamentals. Finally, also a few great methods to make some money on the Brexit. So, are you a profit maker? Are you someone that's open-minded when it comes to making profits? Check hofprofit.com/Brexit. Social media is here. Facebook, Snapchat, Twitter, Weibo, blogging, LinkedIn, Swan, Google+. But how to use them in your advantage? Get yourself the Social Media Expert course. It's the smart point to use all social media in your advantage without burning all your time. Hofprofit.com/SMM. I say Hofprofit.com/SMM.
We are living in a tremendous time. Never it has become so easy to become the next millionaire. If it's become the next self-made millionaire by selling your home or your business or by constantly and ongoingly moving towards the great, glorious millionaireship. You can do it also. It just commits hard work, training, commitment and honesty. Visit hofprofit.com/millionaire for the millionaire report and join the queue on the highway to success. And renewable energy is really taking hard hits at the moment. You have tariffs on solar panels from China in the European Union. You have in India, you have tariffs on Japanese and Malaysian solar panels. In the United States, President Trump is actively derailing a lot of renewable energy projects and financing sources, and there are reasons to say it's good or bad, but matter of the fact is that we all need energy. And in but I always stress out that people need to realize the United States is really depending on Russia for its energy. All the uranium is enriched in Russia. I will not go into details to how and what, but it's something for you to think about. It's where would they do it? We are not going to build a new enrichment factory in the West due to regulatory and public issues. So it's only going to come from Russia. There is no real alternative, and that's something that you need to think about. There is no alternative for it. Renewables could play a great part of it. As you know, I wrote a few reports about investing in solar and wind, and also in innovation. You can find them in the Energy Profit package. Just go to HofProfit and search for it. And I interviewed Joel Stromberg from civilmotion.com. He is a really interesting guest, and I would simply say just listen what he has to say, because that's today's exclusive interview. Start the interview?
Sure.
Okay. Joel, first of all, a very warm welcome to the show.
Thank you for the invitation.
What are you exactly doing in the field of renewable energy?
Actually, I've been in Washington for almost 35 years working on renewable energy and climate change. I'm an independent consultant. I work for companies, for trade associations. I write a number of columns for clean energy publications. And most of my work is in the policy area, actually.
So the policies is for the energy world and the renewable energy in particular really important. So how do you see this? How do you see the policies on renewable energy change over the past 30 to 40 years?
It's been a remarkable change. I remember when I first started out, we were talking theoretically that clean energy would be the energy of the future, and it was good for the environment, that the investment was well worth it. 35 years ago, it was still kind of an idea that was being kicked around by inventors and tinkers in garages and in their basements. And over the last 30 years, it's become a reality. I mean, it's been a very rewarding, although often frustrating, journey from there to here. And I have to admit, in fact, as I go through things this morning, I was noticing, I mean, we're talking about billions of dollars of investments. And when I first started out, I mean, I don't know that we would have actually thought that was realistically a good estimate, although it didn't stop us from seeing that, because at the time, government investment in research and in deployment in the state was really necessary. The same problem then as now, that companies don't have a long time horizon in which they get to invest in new technologies and infecting. There's a plenty of state they take out of research, but it's been a hard journey over the 30 years just to keep everybody engaged. And that's as true today as it was 30 years ago.
And then if we look at your current president, he is not really the most greenest man that the president might say.
In fact, you may be the least green. And I have to admit, over the course of years, something goes on, and I have to admit, I've never seen a leader in this country just so belligerent and agnostic towards not so the thing. We've suffered these things before. Ronald Reagan was not somebody that was particularly favorable for renewable energy, and neither was George Bush, younger, Bush 43. But we were able to deal with that on a political level. The politics in play were such that, you know, if you could get enough people in support of your idea, there'd be give and take on both sides. With Trump, there's absolutely no give and take. And I think among the things that we have to look forward to and have to be worried about is that when he can act individually, say through executive order, by putting on tariffs, using his national security authority to keep uneconomic and filthy open life, he's going to do that. We're kind of in a catch-22 here. Congress in the United States is really kind of incapable of acting. So all the cuts that he's been proposing, and they're very severe. In some cases, he's trying to cut agencies like the Environmental Protection Agency by 70-80%, and to remove all of the research programs. Well, because Congress made a decision, what happens is it goes to a default. So they just keep renewing last year's budget. We haven't had an end policy in the United States. Actually, we've never had an energy and environment policy in the United States. We have pieces. And so what's happening now is that even with the money available, his appointees to the agencies are not getting that money out. And I think the other thing that is hurting, it's actually hurting the United States as well, you have an international conference on the environment, and he sends coal executives to have special meetings to find out how the United States can export more coal to these countries. And so what's happening is that things are slowing down here, and he's causing problems internationally as well. And markets don't like indecision. And so the battle, they're going to wait until these battles begin to get settled at one level or another. So I anticipate the next few years are going to be a problem. I think that it's also a problem, actually, that Europe may be experiencing as well, in the sense that there are a number of populist governments that tend to be more like Trump than they do, say, a more moderate leader. And what we've been hearing about is that, let me back up. In the United States, environment and clean energy tend to be very partisan. Republicans mm-hmm. don't like it. Democrats do. And that's a pattern that seems to be potentially playing itself out in the European Union as well. And so what's happening is that all the markets are kind of held in abeyance until they see more clearly what's going to go on. In the meantime, what's happening here, which is really keeping the solar, wind, renewables alive as far as commercial deployment's concerned, are big companies, Apple, Intel, Johnson & Johnson, are all committing to using as much renewable energy as they possibly can. In some cases, like Microsoft announced the other day that it's actually using 100% of renewable energy to power its operations.
Impressive.
The same thing is actually happening in Europe. Mm-hmm. I was just reading today that over 60% of all the renewable energy purchases in the EU are actually large companies, and that the bond market, the investment markets, are coming into play in these kinds of cases because they feel that when a company that large and demand that great, that they make reasonable investments. What you lose, I think, is the individual, not just the homeowner, but also communities. And community power is something that has been taking off in the United States and has shown itself to be investment worthy. I also understand that in Europe that they're further behind, that the EU is further behind the curve, that what's lacking in the EU, and this doesn't say that any policy in the United States is perfect, but policy seems to be the barrier these days in a lot of cases. And in fact, I've been told the other day that the EU just actually picked up on the community power and is encouraging the countries to create more adaptive policies that allow individuals and neighborhood solar power, where many residents get together and establish a photovoltaic or a cogeneration project. And not only use the power for themselves, but sell it back into the grid. And again, policy, if you don't have the policies in place, then those investments are very uneconomic, and people just don't go forward with it. So again, what you're being left with are large purchases, which is good. I mean, it's great that major companies want to do this, but that's only tapping a portion of the market.
Yeah, oh no, definitely. I mean, your union and what they consider interesting, they are now talking about environment and QID. It is really difficult to get sun produced electricity from Portugal and Spain, which is basically always sunny, into France because the French government want to protect its nuclear industry. And in Poland, they now say that if you are in favor of renewables, you are unpatriotic because the Polish coal industry needs to survive. And they are going to make a deal on green stuff. It's not going to work.
That's right. And the economics, I mean, I think the EU as well, as the United States, and certainly in the developing world, in Asia, for example, the markets are still hung up on coal. In a lot of markets, it's cheaper. In other cases, what's happening is that the plants are already for it, so that it's a sunk investment, and anything that they make off of it is basically profit. And that becomes that's where you get the conflict between, you know, what's good for the company, a company's bottom line or an industry's bottom line, and what's good for the environment don't always mesh very well. And I think that's hopefully going to be able to phase out. One of the things that's really most disturbing from my perspective of the United States is the fact that Trump is willing to declare the use of coal to be in the nation's security interests. And to be honest with you, that's just a bald-faced lie. Not even the utility industry believes that. And if you actually ask most coal companies, they wouldn't believe it either. But they want it. They want it because it keeps their plants alive for just another year or two or five more, which is, I mean, it means there's a lot of money flowing in. The same is happening with old nuclear, where he's trying to declare national security interest and to keep those plants open. I expect in the United States that he'll issue an order, an executive order, a presidential order, within the next month or two that keeps these old plants, these old polluting plants, online. And what will happen is that the courts will end up saying that it's an unconstitutional stretch of his authority. Everything seems to be an unconstitutional stretch of his authority, which is the other problem because it means that everything is going into the courts, and not letting the market decide what's best for the market and whether or not there's enough stability to invest. And that goes all the way across the board. One of the things that's happening around the world is that individuals, you, me, community groups, children, are beginning to sue major polluters. In the United States, for example, we're also getting cities and states willing to sue ExxonMobil and the other major oil companies on the basis of a nuisance case, which means that they're claiming that the companies have known about the problems with burning fossil fuels. They went ahead and did it anyway. And the communities, both in terms of individual health and welfare, but also in the communities, have suffered a harm, the same kind of a harm that if you hit somebody with your car. And what the states and the cities are asking for is for the courts to order the companies to stop polluting, number one, and number two, to pay for all the damage that's been caused. I don't think that even if the law is on the side of these kinds of cases, you can't charge major companies with trillions of dollars in damage and expect your economy to go down. But what's happening is that there's all sorts of pressures coming up, and I think that eventually what's going to happen is that the court cases are going to push the policymakers forward. I know in the Netherlands, for example, the only case that I know of in the world at the moment, that a court has ordered a government to do something about pollution actually occurred in the Netherlands. And the case was similar to several coming in the United States, where actually youth, children under the age of 8 are suing because they say that the policies are killing their future. I mean, not only does it shorten their lives, but it's going to shorten their earning power and everything else. And because of the case in the Netherlands having succeeded, it's just kind of unleashed an entire onslaught of there must be 20, 25 cases now in the U.S. courts and in the world court, including the World Court on for Human Rights, where people are saying stop polluting. Now, if there's enough momentum building up, that it's going to transfer over into the policy area. Ultimately, it still all boils down to policy. And people just, I mean, whether people in the United States or in the EU or in developing countries in Latin America, people cannot stop pressuring their government to put in place rules that allow renewables to compete on an equal basis. If they're allowed to compete, then what's going to happen is, I mean, wind and solar, for example, become so much cheaper over the last few years. I mean, the drop in prices is just is astounding.
It's amazing, and what you see, what they did in Europe, for example, which was a policy change I was really bad. They said, from, well, taxes are so low, solar panels you can buy. We are going to additional taxation on because we cannot compete. We don't want this. And I was just thinking, cheap solar panels for the masses. This is what we want. We can throw panels on every rooftop in Europe.
Yeah, you're right. But what's happening is where the opponents to that come into play is that they don't let you connect to the grid, for example, which so that the meter won't run backwards, or they indicate that if too many people come off the grid, then it makes the grid less reliable. And so what needs to be done is that you need to be able to get things connected in a line. Not only, I mean, the same thing with community solar, for example, that somebody's home may not be able to put a solar panel on it, but there might be a vacant piece of property in the lot that you can put solar arrays on and electrify 500 homes, for example. But you still have to be able to kind of connect these things back in. And until those barriers are removed, there's going to be this tension, and the market is just not going to be able to see the really high level. It really is amazing that I mean, we're not talking about subsidized electricity here in a lot of cases. I mean, the fact is that wind and solar are competitive. The 81% of all the new power that's been put in the world in the last year is renewable. And the potential is even bigger than that if we can get rid of the barriers.
It's amazing. When we're talking about renovating apps, and I want to do the new rooftops, all the things on it, and I want to put two small urban wind turbines on it. And the interesting field was when I went to the city, how is this regulatory, because you need licenses, we have an airport. I checked with the Ministry of Defense, they are running the airport, they are cool with it. And they said, yeah, well, you're gonna put 40 centimeters on it? Yeah, approximately. Well, we're going to treat it like it's a wind turbine of 4 million euros and it's 200 meters high. Did you just say, I understand that in a place, yeah, you can't do that in a normal home, 200 meters up in the sky. I understand. Yeah. I want to put 40 centimeters on top of it. There is a big difference in a few millions of 8,000 euros. I mean, it's one of the great examples that they said.
That's right. It's amazing how... the difference keeps rolling out. I mean, and we have to deal with those differences. I mean, it's all part of making emerging technology mainstream technology. The other thing that's happening too is storage. I mean, batteries are about on the same precipice to break out. They are now economic area solar and wind are. And when that happens, what will occur is the biggest charge against wind and solar, for example, intermittency. You know, the sun doesn't shine at night and the wind doesn't blow. Well, if you have batteries, that's not a problem. And battery technology is finally catching up. And it's going to change the whole dynamic, not only for home systems, but for larger industrial and neighborhood systems as well. Because what happens is you really begin to change the need for a grid, coal and gas and nuclear. What they are, because they're 24 hours, and with batteries, so are renewables.
It's amazing. I mean, quite some time ago, I published a report about making money on energy innovations. Mm-hmm. For example, a lot of people don't realize Nokia, that Finnish company, they are developing a tablet. They are developing a tablet that they say the energy that's in the sound for an average Finnish home, which is really good isolated due to the cold outside, but the sound from outside that you get in, that will charge a tablet and a smartphone.
It's incredible, isn't it?
It's great that you just say, so why should you connect it to the grid? I'm just thinking, I need a new smartphone, I need a new tablet and a new laptop. I want this in it.
No, that's
Just
right.
get it in.
But what's happening is as you experience firsthand, is that the system is the grid, and so I mean, people are defending the status quo. I mean, what you're saying and what I think a lot of us see is that there's going to be a time in the future where you don't need the grid, but for grid operators and for central utilities, they're going to fight until the bitter end to keep that alive because that's their business. And I think that what we're talking about is that societies, whether it's the United States or the EU, wherever, just they're tied to the status quo, and they don't factor change in as a net benefit to their economies. Most of the growth in all economies is based on new technology, not existing technology. And this is where I think that we're also worried in the United States because of Trump, that he won't support the research that's necessary to get these new technologies into the lab and then out of the lab. I mean, I read a study the other day where some Harvard scientists have devised a system where they can actually pull existing CO2 out of the air and convert it into a fuel. Is commercially ready? No, but it needs government research dollars. And when governments back up from that, then what happens is that industries will not be looking at technology. They'll defend more fervently the existing technologies that they have. The oil companies now are somewhat coming around to the fact that there's a future in alternatives, in renewables. I don't know how it is in the EU, but in the United States, especially during major sporting events and stuff, BP and Exxon all talk about how they're no longer just an oil company and they grow in renewables. That's a real positive sign, because if you can replace their income stream from something that's harmful to humanity to something that's positive for humanity, then you're going to reduce the resistance that not only the private sector has, but the private sector has in relationship to encouraging the government. And we always have industry on our side when we march into a parliament or a congress. And look, I mean, we need policies that allow us to go forward because it's in everybody's interest.
And what you see, at least here in the Netherlands, and I'm pretty sure in the US and the most modern countries, the energy companies are extremely dominant. They are extremely powerful. You saw it here in the Netherlands, where we have the gas from Groningen, and there is now some talks about who is going to make the money, and the government want to get close to drilling for the gas. So the owners of the company said, "Well, yeah, we're going to sue the government because we are losing money." And they made now a deal. Yeah, we're going to put more money in. We're going to finance the damage we did, but the government is going to give us 75% of the money back. Which basically means taxpayer has to move on.
That's right. I
Just
mean, that's exactly right.
yeah.
But
It's
again, that's, I mean,
sad
that's
that you feel.
the tendency. It's interesting. I think whether it's the populists on the far right or the progressives on the far left, the one message is really coming clear, not only in the United States, but I think in the United States and the EU as well, is that people are getting fed up with government being tied to these kind of big money operations that really don't pay into what's going on in the world, if you will, or what's needed in the world. And that stuff is really interesting. Like I said, I mean, if you're on the far right, you're not going to be much of an environmentalist. If you're on the far left, maybe too much of an environmentalist and shock and try to shock the system too great. But we have to find kind of a new balance. I mean, people underestimate what energy to them, not as a matter of lights and computers and things, but there are studies showing that the EU would go to meet a target of 34% renewables in 2030, that the collective healthcare costs of the EU would drop by between $35 and $71 billion a year. That's a lot of money.
That's
And what they're talking about,
amazing.
it's a huge amount because of the
A
morbidity. I
huge
mean, what
amount.
happens is that people, right, I mean, people are dying out there, or they're sick out there, and if you want your health system, it's not always a question of more doctors and dollars. Sometimes it's changing the trigger that makes people sick in the first place, which in a lot of cases is the emissions from coal-fired power plants.
It's really amazing what you saw. Something here in the Netherlands, they talk always about healthcare costs and all the problems, they simply throw money at it. And I'm quite often at the Dutch Ministry of Healthcare, and I had a chat with a high-ranking civil servant. He was a podcast guest earlier. And I just said, well, we have the healthcare insurance companies. You're forced by law to have one. Why are they not sending out a weekly magazine, like a TV guide or something, with discounts to manipulate you to healthier living? Like what I use as an example, don't buy a bottle of Coke when you're thirsty, but some pieces of watermelon with discount, just.
Right, no, you're right. I mean, yeah. And what's interesting too, because what's happening also fairly universally is that insurance companies, probably not health, but property companies and business insurance companies are all saying, you know, you've got to do something about climate change because this is going to cost us a lot of money. And you would think that the insurance industry would be more integrated as far as its understanding of where the risks and threats are. But you're absolutely right. I mean, health companies do not get, have not been very much invested in trying to get healthier sources of energy, for example. And I think that's coming. It's just people need to push on those companies. I mean, there's a movement that's actually gaining momentum again around the world is stockholders going to the boards of directors at the meeting and saying, what are you doing about sustainability? What are you doing to decrease the risks and increase your profits based on a lower insurance cost, for example? And I mean, that again, that's something that is speeding up, but it's not there yet.
Well, and also something, it's just like, we can make money out of this. It's just, what I always say, what I consider a really bad policy in the Netherlands, we put wind turbines on places where there is no wind. Mm-hmm. So we're going to finance the owner of the wind turbine, and there are wind energy project developers who say, well, we have a lot of sea and water, we want to do it in the water, and no, we don't want subsidy from you. And we're not doing this. So I would simply say, go the proper route. I mean, why finance something which is not working? I mean,
right? No, you're right. And you know, the again, going back to the initial question you asked me, what changes have I seen? Mm-hmm. I mean, 35 years ago, I could have said what I'm about to say now is that, you know, there are multiple renewable energy technologies that are available. So I mean, it's not everywhere. It's not wind everywhere. It's not ocean everywhere. Put the resource in the proper place and begin with efficiency conservation, and there's no place in the world that renewables can't be applied. Mm-hmm. But in this country, again, going back 5 years, what happened was that all sorts of PV panels had been subsidized, so consumers bought them. And these companies that really didn't understand solar, number one, and would sell you the product, but then would go bankrupt 6 months later. So people were, they couldn't get service, or they were stuck with panels that didn't work, and they didn't know how to get rid of them and things. And so what happens is that the infrastructure question as far as businesses and services, was giving the technology really bad name. It wasn't technology's problem. It was the business side problem. And the same thing happens when you put wind in places where wind turbines, where there's no wind, then what people are going to do is say, you know, this stuff doesn't work. It's, you know, it's a gimmick. It's a trick. And that becomes a problem. I mean, people have to understand that you can't do this sloppily. You have to do it disciplined and to match your resources. That to me is just simple logic 101, but it doesn't always happen that way in government circles because people are trying to capture not the resource, but the tax credit or the subsidy or whatever it is. I mean, in some cases, they want the loss because they write it off against other profits. And I think that we have to be careful about not letting renewables be used in that way. I mean, satisfy something that has nothing to do with the environment or good business sense.
No, definitely. And the interesting field is that everyone talks, especially with the past elections, and everyone talks on energy independence, but are renewables who really makes you independent. I mean, I don't know how good you are in the situation or in the knowledge about the nuclear industry in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all your uranium you get it from Russia.
No, you do. Although I have to admit, you're right. I mean, but I have to admit too that my personal feeling is that it's not something that's shared by a lot of my colleagues in the renewable energy areas. I think we need nuclear power at some point, not everywhere, but in some places. And the new reactors are much safer The problem, of course, is nobody wants to store the waste. There are major problems with nuclear. Don't get me wrong. But the fact is that nuclear does not put carbon out in the air. And this is, I don't know that nuclear will ever make it because of all the debate and the problems with waste and everything else that goes on, security issues and stuff. These things could be solved if people actually sat down. I think you were more reasonable about it, but that's something that I'm not willing to walk the plank on, so to speak. But the fact is that even with renewables, I don't think that we're going to be able to meet the carbon reduction goals that everybody's saying are necessary without nuclear. Now, that could change if the world became much more efficient in how it used its resources and stopped doing things that in manufacturing and agriculture and what have you. It's, you know, the environment is an interconnected system of which renewable energy and energy in general is only a portion. I mean, we could go 100% renewables throughout the entire world and still not be able to slow climate change down enough to not get to that 1.5 or 2.0 centigrade threshold that the scientists say marks the beginning of real trouble. And so it's, you know, people have to think globally on things. I just wrote an article where I said there's no singular answer. There are singular opportunities that we can actually avail ourselves of to improve things. But ultimately, the solution is a collective of various technologies and industrial practices and just human consumer practices. I mean, you know, don't buy plastic bags. Tell your supermarket to stop putting your groceries in plastic. I mean, there's just so much that needs to be done. And I think I hate to sit when people don't to take this bigger picture and then take the big picture is what I say. And then, you know, pick the pieces that you want to do something about. And sooner or later, if we all did that, we actually might have a solution there.
Oh, yeah, well, definitely. I mean, that's a great thing. Come on, we are the power. We can ruin the world. We can save the world. We can go all the roads around.
Unfortunately,
that's a great time.
We can also destroy the world. I'm not sure that we've decided which way we want to go yet.
well, what shall we say about you got a great president, so... That's something that the Western world is going
happy,
at least.
I'm happy to give them to you if you would like.
Well, would bring some fun. And I think in the Netherlands you can do for the world much. I mean, the President of the United States is really important.
Yeah,
I mean,
he is.
Prime Minister of the Netherlands. In the Netherlands, yeah, well, who cares?
Well, the Netherlands.
It's a big home.
I mean, the answer to that is the Netherlands should. And I mean, people just can't, you know, wait around for Trump to see the light because he's not going to. And you're right. I mean, he has, in fact, impacted the progress that was being made in the world. But we just have to factor that into our strategies. And I think that I haven't seen anybody quite as hostile as Trump or as belligerent or as unattentive to what the facts of the world really are about. But the fact of the matter is that he's there and we better figure out a way to deal with that. In this country, it's what's happening are mayors in cities large and small. State people are all getting together saying, okay, well, we're not going to do it at the level of the meantime. We'll do it at the local level. You need a national policy. You need a global policy, actually. I mean, even if the United States stopped polluting, it doesn't necessarily stop the march towards too warm, if you will. But the fact of the matter is that should not be an excuse for people not to do something about it, because if enough pieces get going, sooner or later, you've got to hope they come together and feed off of each other in a very positive way.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And what is your advice for anyone who want to change the world towards renewables from the policy
side? My advice is to get to policymakers and submit to the innovation that's out there, and where possible to actually to subsidize through rigorous policies. I mean, you don't want you don't want subsidizing electricity at any cost, but to create a structure that will in fact allow for new technologies to come in, that nurture them just long enough that they get a foothold and then let the market go forward. That's one of the things that we're finding is that these technologies are of competing. But the government has to understand that this is not going to happen just on its own. And it doesn't even have to subsidize as long as it keeps the competitive rules open to other people and doesn't subsidize backwards. What's happening and what happens is that you have a choice, either subsidize the new ones or take the subsidies away from the old ones, like coal and what have you. So my message is neutrality. Get into a neutral marketplace and let the innovators innovate.
Oh yeah, well, that would be great. I mean, you said, look at what said by Nokia, that new idea that they got. You said people are going to do the great things.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, it's, you know, let the people say, let Trump be Trump. As far as I'm concerned, let the people be the people, and somehow it'll come out all right. You know, with a little help. And I guess the other message is to keep abreast of all the changes that are going on so that when you make your case to policymakers, it's not about charity. It's about economic competitiveness and also society.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is there any final thing you want to say? And where can we find more?
You've got my contact. If your listeners would like to get in touch with me, please feel free to give them my contact information. And I appreciate the chance to...
I will link to your blog on the show note pages, so that will be out.
Terrific. Great. I really appreciate it. Feel free to call me again.
Oh, well, what do you say about Evan? I think that Joel was a really interesting guest. I really hope I will get them back a few times a year, I hope, just to give some light on what's happening on the renewable energy field and the policy change. Because what you need to realize, if you cannot simply put a thing, solar and wind turbine on, the example I gave you, I want to put one on a rooftop, and the municipality, the city of Eindhoven, is going to treat it as 30 to 50 centimeters, same way as 200 meters. So there are a lot of things happening, a lot of things are changing, and there are quite some things that you need to think about. Having that said, then that's it for today. If you want to make profits on renewable energy, check out the Energy Profit Package. Just go to hofprofit.com/energyprofitpackage. And well, I will simply say I look forward to hearing back from you, and I will talk to you tomorrow. And I will say cheers and make it a profitable day.